This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way, take the mic.
And tonight we're going to be talking about Raw. But hey, welcome everyone on the YouTube channel. Way and I just got warmed up. We went a cool 27 minutes chatting all about the news, speaking about the passing of Max Justice, Mike Raybeck, Northern California-based independent wrestler decades ago. A whole update for Way on the Best of the Super Juniors, chatting a bit about Ozawa and Kaito Kiyomiya from Saturday night from Noah's Card, as well as what is going on with AEW Collision. We talked about all their the misfires this past weekend that resulted in a lot of fans missing the final half hour of Collision, as there was a collision of technology that prevented most Americans from being able to see the end of Collision.
Maybe Warder owes them an extra half hour for this weekend that they could throw in.
You know what? That's okay.
No?
That's okay.
You're good?
Okay. I think we're going to get more than enough wrestling this weekend that no one needs more.
Right. Okay.
Maybe they could say, you know what? 90 minutes. That was a clean show.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. SmackDown could take notes. All of that can be found on the XL edition at postwrestlingcafe.com. Later on this week, we have coming your way a very special edition. It's the book club with myself and Neil Flanagan for our Double Double and Espresso members. This week, we're chatting All the President's Men by Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. What a contrast this is going to be to a modern day. But that is going to be coming up on the cafe also later this week for all cafe members. Very special review of this week's Dark Side of the Ring, the Scream Queen Daphne. Kate from Montreal is getting together with Karen Peterson, and they will do a very special review this Thursday covering that Dark Side of the Ring special. They've done film reviews in the past and have always received tremendous feedback. I'm sure this one will be no different. And also, Collision Course will be a special Friday edition this week because Collision is airing on Thursday night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We hope.
Yeah.
We hope.
Fingers crossed, and they're putting it out on Friday to hopefully get the upload the next day if that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And we will have you covered all weekend long. Way and I will go live Saturday night after Saturday night's main event and Sunday after Double or Nothing, while Brayden and Davey will be handling NXT Battleground duties. Not a fan of these many shows, especially Double on one day, but I think we're going to be getting a lot of them over the next couple of months.
At the very least, I hope they're good shows.
I hope so, too. I'm not rooting for terrible shows.
Yeah, that'd be worse.
But yes, we appreciate everyone's support over at postwrestlingcafe.com. We're going to get to Raw, but I guess I am required first to just put a bow. I'm not going to share any glee. Wait, did you watch any of Game 7 on Sunday night?
I did not.
I watched the entire game, and all I can say is that first I will start off with this. I started the first period. First of all, my kids were very excited to watch this hockey game. Okay. So,
so if not for them, would you be watching?
That's a good question. I don't know if I would have been incentivized to watch it on my own. I might have caught bits and pieces. I would not have watched as much of it if not for them wanting to watch it. So we start, and I'm trying to just watch it with like a non-judgmental view, but man, Sportsnet really do sway you in certain, like the stats are coming up. It's like Toronto 0-6 in their last game sevens. Brad Marchand 4-0 in game sevens against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I was like, man, these stats here do not read well. Dude, the first 10 minutes of this game, Florida outplayed the pants off this team. And then I will say Toronto had, I would say, 7 good minutes in the first period. Okay, that's the best I can say. They had a good end to the first period. They even got a breakaway in the first. Didn't score, but hey, fine.
Scoreless
after one. Okay, it was like even. Yeah. I've got to go put my daughter to bed, so I go upstairs. I put her to bed. I come down. It is 3-0. Here's the Toronto I know. after a whole night, they have finally shown up. And then I was engrossed with the rest of this game. And I kept watching. And then you start to hear like the trail of boos. I was like, here come the fans that yell at me. And then they're the first to like jump off the ship. I watched right till the very end, which is more than I can say for half this arena, which filed out of this place in the third period. God knows how much they spent. The announcers say half the arena has emptied. And these were like the prime, the amount of empties you could have seen by 7 minutes left in the third. Like this
people
was
don't even have to work tomorrow. It's a holiday.
It was a holiday. Like you were just leaving out of protest, which I guess, listen, you pay for your tickets. You can do whatever you want. People are throwing sweaters onto the ice. They're booing the Leafs. And then they got one goal early in the third period. Place goes insane. It's 3-1 at that point. 30 seconds later, Florida scores. This fandom was done. They were checked the fuck out. And they scored two more times, and they mirrored their 6-1 win from game 5. I couldn't believe it.
Amazing. Wow.
So they got a stay of execution on Friday, and we go to the post game, and dude, the Sportsnet panel, they're just destroying this team. They're like, you know, you really feel bad for these guys, but they're just not that good. It's like, big changes. We need big changes. It's like, they made it to game 7. This is what I can never understand, okay, about, like, sports, like, breakdowns. And stuff. If Toronto had won this game by the skin of their teeth, it would be a 180. It's like, perfect team. This is how we got the core four, and they needed the time to mature, to gel, and they got the right coach. We had a goalie with Wall that we could get behind. Everyone would have been singing the praises of this team, but they lose one game, and it's curtains. Destroy this team. It's just all or nothing, and that's what I love about sports reaction in this city. It's two extremes. There's nothing down the middle, and that's what I love. And it happens. It's just a toxic relationship that people have with this team, and they'll go through this every single goddamn year. And that's the entertainment I get out of this. It's like, it's they give you no reason to just so blindly get behind them, but they have a fandom that loves this team, that will live and die with them. And so I finished the night by rewinding to the pregame where the Sportsnet guy is in the crowd interviewing fans, and he goes to this one gentleman, how long have you been waiting for this game 7? He's like, I've been waiting 58 years, and you're going to wait another 58, okay? Because it's never coming home. I'm done. Goodness. NHL season is over. Wow. Cheer for all these people who are like want to bring one home for Canada. Cheer for Edmonton, okay? Edmonton's your team.
I await this next.
We'll
year.
Do this like clockwork next May.
Yeah,
if they even make it this far, I doubt they will make it to the second round because a huge chunk of this team is going to be gone. They're not going to retain all these players. It's going to be a diminished team, and you know what? That's where you get.
Okay.
Big changes. Anything else?
No. I mean, I hope you had fun. I suppose
I had a great time.
Yeah, and I hope anybody who might be disappointed, I hope you also had fun. That's all I care about.
They got you to 7 games. You can't say there was a lack of drama. They didn't get blown out 4 straight games.
Yeah, I gave you something to do, something to hope for, something to care about.
Yeah, yeah. It'll, won't get this far next year, so cherish 2025. To Raw we go from Greenville, South Carolina, 9,812, according to WrestleTix. And we're starting off with Logan Paul, who is predicting that he will beat Jey Uso this Saturday and that he won a singles title 12 years before Jey Uso could. And he's knocked Jey out 3 times. I really like the way that the show bookended itself. You had Jay Logan coming out touting his knockout record of Jay, and we would get the closing scene that would propel this by one. But out comes Gunther, as we had suspected, heavily building up to the different scenarios that could come out of Saturday night's main event. So Gunther is hit with "you tapped out" chance. But then Gunther acknowledges Logan Paul is a self-made social media megastar. "You have built a digital empire," a term I never thought Gunther would use. But Gunther also notes he could learn from Logan Paul, from his entrepreneurship and marketing skills, and that Logan winning the title would be good for business. "But that's just it, Logan. You're all about business. For me, this is personal. And I would feel disrespected if you took away the opportunity for me to take that title from Jey Uso. And unlike Pat, I don't sense any heart in you, Logan, and I would eat you alive." On June 9th, Gunther exits, and then Jey appears behind, super kicks Logan, and says, "I'll see you on Saturday." And I'll see you, Gunther, in Phoenix. So that was the start to our show, and teeing up Saturday night's main event and Gunther's match next month.
I thought it was a really strong segment, you know, especially with Gunther, who really does not miss on the microphone. He has not been in one segment that has ever disappointed me with him on the microphone. And his role here was to cast enough doubt that we could see a Gunther versus Logan Paul match in the future. And I thought he kind of towed that line perfectly to create that feeling. He, you know, by necessity had to kind of flirt with being a little bit of a babyface in this segment because he was opposing Logan Paul. I thought he did a great job of it. So, I mean, it continues to show me that, hey, whenever they want to pull the trigger on him, they have a great babyface in Gunther. And it doesn't require any sort of character changing. Like, there's enough nobility to his character that I think is respectful for an audience. You know, he is somebody who is ultimately just like really good at this, and that is an admirable skill that if they choose to emphasize can be a great babyface quality.
They showed Roxanne Perez and Julia last week. Perez is complaining about their loss. They have to go to Adam Pearce. They want a rematch. Julia says there is no we, and that was her write off from Raw. And then we cut to Roxanne Perez signing with Raw, and so we have Julia on SmackDown, Roxanne Perez on Raw.
Yeah. I mean, there was really kind of no teasing of any sort of tension between the two prior to this. So something certainly tells me that this was a late decision and that they had maybe come up with it last week and then shot this right after the match in order to just kind of get to where they were going to. So I think for me, at least, it continues to call into question their ability to seamlessly call up talents from NXT. You know, Roxanne in particular, like, kind of has been flirting with like this sort of no man's land for quite a while up until tonight. And this sort of team with Julia that was, I think, kind of poorly explained even through their debut on Raw up until like a breakup that was completely just like for
a digital exclusive.
Yeah. I think it continues to call into question like how much seamless communication there actually is between the two. I mean, I at least think it could be improved.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, including an in-depth look at WrestleMania 32 from 2016, a 2003 edition of SmackDown featuring the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and a special patron's pick where you get to choose what John and Wei review. MCU Later returns with a review of Thunderbolts. Pollock and Ting will sit down and talk. We've also got coverage of Wrestling Dontaku, Collision Course every Saturday night, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 a month gets you in the door at postwrestlingcafe.com. Then I thought this was very smart on WWE to capitalize on this Knicks Pacers series that's starting tomorrow, where they showed the footage from last June when they were at the Garden, where Jalen Brunson of the Knicks and Tyrese Halliburton of the Pacers did that big stare down and ringside. And then you had LA Knight getting involved with Brunson. And so they tee up that Tyrese Halliburton will be on later tonight. And this footage of these two doing this stare down has gotten played so much over the last 48 hours with this series coming up. So I think it's been very smart of WWE to attach themselves so heavily to what is the biggest this is going to be the biggest, like most watched television over the next 2 weeks, this series between the Knicks and Pacers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just kind of completely fits into their wheelhouse of wanting to just, you know, we used to like maybe joke that like Vince, you know, his long desire is to like get some sort of like credibility for the WWE in the mainstream. That's been taken to a greater extreme now under the TKO regime. And any sort of attachment they could have to anything that is outside of professional wrestling in the mainstream, they will just give up like any airtime to in order to achieve. And this one happened to be something that they lucked out on. You know, it's serious and you know it's important when Paul Levesque tweets about it. And I believe they actually even showed it on air. His tweet was something to the effect of like, what? It's as if we wrote this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah. So, really just kind of reminding all of us that, yes, this is a written show. And, yeah, here we go.
As great as this crossover is, they will never achieve the level that they WCW did with Rodman and Malone that year.
I suppose that was a different
where time. They go from fighting over the ball in the NBA finals into Bash at the Beach.
Yeah. So this was, should we just talk about the interview and announcement at this point? Like,
yeah. So they did a satellite interview with Tyrese Halliburton that was recorded earlier in the day. And, what was mentioned here, they pretty much went over, he's going to be a playable character on 2K25. And they're also putting out Tyrese Halliburton merchandise on WWE.com. So they are
Jalen Brunson merch as well.
Oh, Brunson merch too. Okay, So both of them. So, yeah. I mean, they're heavily in business with these two. And again, I think this is like a really smart pair up. And obviously, this goes well beyond just the fact that they're playing each other in this series. This has been in the works for some time, as they mentioned.
Obviously, like these sort of scans or a video game isn't just done overnight or even like in the span of a week. So clearly they had something going on with Tyrese Halliburton anyway, and probably sped up the promotion in light of this particular series. I mean, it came across really well. You know, Halliburton comes across like a legitimate fan who like is just like, I don't know much about sports. I don't watch these games, but like he seems like a very likable person. And with anybody who is of any sort of fame who might be a wrestling fan, they are probably trying to convince them to have a wrestling match or get involved in a match at some point. So maybe you will see you know, those two on opposite sides at some point in the off season, John.
Yeah, and I should correct myself. Game one is not tomorrow night. It is Wednesday night at 8. So even more incentive for them to really promote game one as much as they can. All right. So after that, we go on to
Jay and Paul Heyman are in the back.
That's there. Right. Sorry, so. Heyman states that Braun is not looking for his title, but just to slow down his momentum. It's a non-title match tonight because you're the short-term champion. The long-term plan is Seth Rollins winning it. So this is like when Vince told Daniel Bryan after WrestleMania 30, you're the short-term champion and you're going to lose to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. That's the long-term plan.
It was quite the heel line, I'm sure, then as well. Yeah.
Penta and AJ against Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. Carlito is in the corner, but not Dominic, as they're continuing to build this friction that Dominic is getting too much of a big head after winning the title. This match went over 17 minutes, and they had a great crowd. I mean, they built up for this hot tag to AJ, and they exploded when AJ got this tag. Balor goes to the eyes, because that's what heels do, and AJ recovers, gets the calf crusher, and JD comes off the top with a splash, missing AJ and landing on his partner. So Styles then flips off the apron into an inverted DDT to JD on the floor. Crowd is just super hot here. Carlito posts AJ as they go through a second commercial break, and afterward, Balor stops Made in Japan by Penta and runs into a super kick. JD is distracting the referee as Carlito grabs Penta on the corner. So AJ takes out Carlito, JD hits a dive, and then it's Penta with the Mexican Destroyer off the steps to the floor, taking out JD when El Grande Americano shows up in the crowd, headbutts Penta with the loaded mask, and that sets up the coup de grace by Finn Balor, pinning him in 17 minutes and 5 seconds in a really entertaining tag match, but amplified by, I thought, a really hot crowd throughout most of this.
Yeah, very strong match, I thought. All four were really good here. JD and AJ, I thought, especially stood out for me. So, you know, you could also see on commentary, like, they're trying to really hype up JD as, like,
he punctured a lung and he finished the match.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they're trying to remind us of that as, like...
It's kind of all this guy has, like, well, as a defining characteristic.
I was going to say, I kind of feel like at this point, it's kind of, I mean, maybe it's kind of late. Like, if they were going to make a real effort to, like, push him based off of that injury, they should have crafted maybe a storyline for us to focus on him with, or video packages and whatnot. But the fact is, he's still coming back to being what, number four in the Judgment Day. So I thought in ring he was very strong here.
He looked very good in the match.
I didn't even mind the finish so much, you know, despite the fact that there was interference here, because I thought
this
was actually...
is probably building to Worlds Collide. I'm thinking is maybe like some stipulation, like whether it's mask versus mask or
that
something.
Would probably
to that
be the main event, don't you think? Like, is there a hotter angle for that particular show than an El Grande Americano versus Penta?
It would be up there because you're not going to have Rey on that show.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I thought it was an unexpected interference and cleverly designed. So, it overall, very entertaining. And I think the Penta Americano angle is in pretty good shape.
Kathy Kelly interviews Io Sky. She knows what it's like to win Money in the Bank, and she's ready for whoever wins. And Becky walks in, stating that Io has never beaten her. And then she walks out to the ring for her qualifier. But before that match, Logan Paul is on the phone and gets interrupted by Seth Rollins, who states that Jey Uso is not going to be 100% this Saturday because we're going to hurt him tonight. So just a premeditated attack here on camera announced. And that Seth will be waiting if Logan can get past Jey and Gunther. That's a lot of ifs. And you will know who to thank if you win the belt. And meanwhile, in the background, our background cameo of the night was the New Day chatting it up with Grayson Waller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever that's supposed to mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, throughout the show, they're really kind of going out of their way, not just to convince you that Logan Paul could beat Jey Uso and that Logan Paul could eventually face Gunther, but they're even kind of like taking us beyond that now with a Seth Rollins saying, if you could beat Jey and if you could beat Gunther, you could possibly face me. So really trying to convince us that Logan Paul, at the very least, might have a chance to win on Saturday.
It's like they're building up like three title defenses at once.
Yeah. And whether or not this match takes place between Rollins and Logan, I mean, I think it's still very worthwhile to do this, not only, of course, because it, you know, throws, it just kind of allows people to suspend their disbelief, but it also, like, it helps, like, gives you a bit of a character from Seth Rollins to kind of, like, show you he's sort of a manipulator. He's a guy who, like, makes a lot of deals and thinks several steps ahead and continues to tell you about his greater ambitions of being a champion. Right.
Yeah. And you've got this mix too of challengers that you can, you know, if you want to get through like the Saudi Arabia show, like you could do something with Gunther, Logan, and Seth. Cause it does feel like Seth is being primed for one of those SummerSlam nights. That would seem like you're outlining your summer. Like Seth is going to be the big title defense, likely for Jey.
Mm-hmm.
Becky Lynch, Natalya, and Roxanne Perez in our first of two Money in the Bank qualifying matches. So they did mention here of Natalya's recent Bloodsport match and appearing for at the NWA Crockett Cup over the weekend with Kenzie Page, although they did not show any footage of her going after the quote-unquote fan.
No, they did not. Did not mention that part.
Didn't play.
What do you think of that?
I didn't watch the show. I only saw the clip, and I just assumed it was like an angle.
Same. Yeah.
I didn't give any thought to it. I thought these three, they just had a great match. And Roxanne Perez, especially, like, she more than like hangs in these situations. And I just thought everything here was very smooth. They came up with a lot of interesting, creative three-way spots, and not even doing like the pattern, like one person gets knocked out, so we have the default singles match until the save. Like they were doing plenty with the three of them as well. Some of the highlights included Becky hitting a side Russian leg sweep with a combo discus lariat by Perez onto Natalya. And then the pop rocks gets avoided by Becky. She hits a manhandle slam, so Natalya's in to break that up. Perez then comes off the turnbuckle with a pop rocks to Natalya, who simultaneously German suplexes Becky out of the corner. And we see the sharpshooter applied to Perez. Becky breaks it up with a facebuster, and it's Natalya applying a double sharpshooter to both, taking their legs. And Becky gets to the rope. There's a manhandle slam on Natalya, and then Lyra Valkyria appears, yanking Becky to the floor, and eventually gets into a tug of war with her as Lyra takes Becky to the floor. Natalya turns around and is hit with pop rocks, and it's Perez winning at 14 minutes and 35 seconds. I really enjoyed this match quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought the match was really strong and kind of carries this incredible like wave that a momentum that I feel the Raw Women's Division is having, where like you could justifiably argue that they've been stealing the show, you know, several weeks in a row now on Raw. I thought it was a fast-paced match. It was technical. These three, I think, are, well, they're really strong wrestlers, and I felt like there was an effort made between the three of them to have another show stealer, the way that Roxanne, Julia, and EO and Rhea had last week. You know, they laid out a pretty ambitious match, and I thought they, for the most part, like delivered exactly what I think they were looking for. So it's a really, really strong division this Raw Women's roster is right now. Certainly a lot more than SmackDown, and I definitely feel like for me at least, they're becoming one of the things I'm looking forward to watching on Raw every single week.
Yeah, and a notable fact: we had Raw, NXT, and SmackDown all headlined by the women last week as well for those
matches.
It's
getting to the point where like I don't even think about
it. It's not, and that's the way it should be. It's like no one bats an eye that they can be put in those positions. And like Stratton and Nia Jax got like great, like chair to the faces aside, like it got like a very strong reaction to that match, especially. Jey Uso's in the locker room and Sami Zayn comes in. He's going to have his back tonight and he won't have to worry about Braun and Rollins because him and Punk are taking care of them this Saturday. We were in Greenville, so someone decided, hey, remember that time we were here in 2012 and John Cena faced Michael Cole in a no DQ match, and they showed highlights of Michael Cole's match with Cena where he was stripped down to his underwear, barbecue sauce dumped on top of him, and questioning my life of why I was even following this product in 2012. This was like the stuff that like I couldn't imagine watching on any regularity.
I'm waiting for the whole Cole heel run DVD box set whenever they decide to bring back DVD box sets.
It'll probably just be a playlist on Vault or something.
Man, it just felt like a weird dream. But I mean, I'm glad they could poke fun at themselves for this sort of stuff now.
Yeah. I'm sure there was one person who just thought that's hilarious. It's barbecue sauce.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Pierce says that Tozawa's cleared, so he's getting his match with Rusev next week. Gable and Ivy Nile come in. He mocks Tozawa, and Gable says, both of us want qualifying matches for the Money in the Bank. And then New Day walk in, and they're going to be defending their tag titles next week in the triple threat with the War Raiders and the Creeds. This was just getting as many people FaceTime as we could. Sheamus and Grayson Waller. Early on, Waller runs Sheamus into the post, and he's instructing Austin Theory to take notes as they go to break. We come back. The crowd is chanting for Austin Theory. Waller chops Sheamus, and Sheamus responds by just chopping the hell out of this guy. And I don't know what got into these two, but they decided, let's just murder each other. That's probably our best chance to have a really entertaining match. So we see stuff that just felt so, I don't want to say like uncooperative, but just like it looked very, like we had Waller go to leapfrog out of the corner and he just comes straight down on Sheamus's back. And it just felt like these two just had an agreement to just go out there and just let everything fly. Sheamus at one point just literally deadlifts him from behind and is just holding him by the neck and just throws him, does that Dublin smile where he fish hooks him. Waller tries the 10 beats. So Sheamus lifts him up like he's going for the white noise and just lets go of him and drops him down on the edge of the apron. That looked no fun to be taking. So then Waller gets yanked up for the 10 beats. Waller tries to leave, but Theory won't let him go. So Sheamus, after the 10 beats, hits the brogue kick and pins him in 11 minutes and 48 seconds.
Yeah, like in watching the match, I just kind of felt like it was okay. Like it's a Sheamus match where, I mean, the intent is to sort of have a banger where you're working a little bit stiffer than usual. But now that in hitting you recap some of those spots, I do wonder if there was some like unintentional uncooperation or maybe even like tension.
Like there were points Sheamus is just like ragdolling him or just dropping him in like awkward spots. It was just you know, it seemed like a lot of people enjoyed this.
It was a great match.
Oh, it was a very physical match. Like it was probably one of Grayson Waller's better matches that you were going to have. And this is Sheamus's wheelhouse of a
certainly
match.
For a Waller and Theory match. I would even say Sheamus, who like, I mean, has airtime, but isn't necessarily like a focused upon character like this. You know what? Sheamus consistently gets these sort of reactions for these matches because I think he always delivers with this sort of thing. To my surprise, the crowd chanting for Austin Theory, I did not expect that unless there was some sort of like connection to like Greenville that he would have, but I wouldn't know.
No.
But they were cheering for Theory and thus cheering against Waller. So there might be some interest from this particular audience on whatever those two are building up towards. But overall, it got to a high level of physical intensity that I think you've come to expect from a Sheamus match and was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, it does kind of play into this story of like Waller and Theory volunteering the other for a match with Sheamus, where it's like they should get the shit beaten out of them as like the against this guy who's just a monster. We also, we did not mention that Michael Cole and Pat McAfee have placed a bet for this Pacers-Knicks series. It's pretty high stakes. Mm-hmm. If Michael Cole loses, he'll wear a tank top on Raw, which is not even the most embarrassing thing we've seen in the last 20 minutes involving Michael Cole on an episode of Raw. And Pat McAfee will have to wear, wait for it, a suit.
Oh.
So, man.
I thought he was
a lot is at stake here on this series. I mean,
I thought he was going to say shorts.
Yeah, this is quite the high stakes poker that these two are playing. So I'll be at the edge of my seat to see who wins. Kathy Kelly interviews Gunther and Rollins walks in, admires the work that Gunther did with my championship. Gunther says, "You are not the long-term plan. I am the future." And Rollins warns Gunther, "You will become the target if you win the belt." And Gunther says, "I am eagerly awaiting it." And I thought they just did a really good job of taking Jay, Logan, Seth, and Gunther and just mixing them and matching them throughout the show. And you could go in all of these different combinations over the next 2 months. And I think they have enough that you don't need a whole lot to build up some of these directions. And some of them they'll go in, some of them they won't. But they did a very good job of trying to give a reason for any of these potential outcomes and you wanting to see them.
They're doing a good job of telling the audience who the players are and who we should be focused on for this particular story. And that sort of organization, I think, is always very welcome for a pro wrestling product that spans as many people as they do.
So the show was going along really well. And then we had like the low point of the show, which was not any kind of a quality, but just an unfortunate injury here. Minutes into the Money in the Bank qualifying match between Rhea Ripley, Zoe Stark, and Kairi Sane. And Zoe Stark goes for... So we should set the scene here. Rhea Ripley is on the floor on the far side, and Kairi Sane is dealing with her. And Stark is going for a springboard missile dropkick. And I guess she is expecting Kairi to move into position while she's already in mid-flight, and Kairi was not there. So Stark ends up coming up short, and she collides into Kairi, and the way she goes down, total freak accident, where her right knee turns in, like, seriously, a 90-degree angle that looked so sick. And she like yells right before Kairi is there, and the trainer races in. The wrestlers just kind of go to the corners. This is a total legit deal, and you know this right away. And during the break, if you were watching it on the commercial feed, the trainer lifts her up and just carries her to the back. It is worth noting this was her right knee. It was the left knee that she tore her ACL and meniscus in back in 2021. But this looked terrible, and I'm not going to be surprised if this is a pretty serious injury that she's sustained. But we don't have any update yet on the severity of it, but it looked really bad.
Looked awful, and horrifying hearing her screams on live television. Awful, you know. And man, it's, I think, extra scary for Zoe Stark being the only survivor of her faction that's been decimated by recent cuts. And we now know that, or at least we can maybe assume that, like, frequent injury isn't necessarily something that they will like overlook, you know, when it comes to like how employable and how useful you are to their bottom line. So it's I'm sure a number of anxieties, you know, for her coming off of something like this, not to mention just like a, not to say like she was going to get a big push, at least we don't assume coming off of this, but still any time off, you know, for a talent at her level is significant.
Yeah. And Zayn and Ripley had to just go through the rest of this match, and this becomes a singles match after the break. This is, if you're watching this is the shot, and then the trainer here would just lift her up. Like, she couldn't even like limp her way back. Like, it looked really bad. I would be absolutely stunned if this is not like a major injury.
Yeah. So I mean, in pro wrestling, you know, live pro wrestling, it's always interesting to see like what happens in these sort of scenarios. We talked a lot about how I think enjoyable the last three-way was between the women. That was a match that was so densely choreographed that if one person happened to be like missing, the whole thing would have fallen apart. We could assume that this match was going to be very much the same thing. You know,
I'm sure like they had to rework all of this, regardless of like who was going over here. Like, you're taking out like a key part of the match, and having
probably
to...
the person who was going to take the pin of the three, you know, was a well, obviously it wasn't going to be Rhea, and likely was not going to be Kairi upon her return. So it's always very most interesting for me to see how do these people put a match together? And I thought they impressively did so.
Yeah. And I like it's something that you are going to see over time of performers that are coming up. Like, here you have two people that have like a fair amount of experience behind them. But we're going to run into like a lot of people like over these next couple of years on national television that are not working huge schedules, that are, if you're starting out in the WWE system, you don't have like that independent background. It's like, this is the kind of stuff that like, this is going to be obviously a big pivot point if you find yourself in it. But there's some who it's like, okay, this is almost second nature for them, and others that this is probably their worst nightmare of being in the midst of.
Yeah, the ability to improvise, I mean, is something that I think is tougher and tougher of a skill to acquire these days. In fact, like when we think back about Rhea Ripley, for me, I think what, you know, landed her on the map for a lot of people was her reaction to Tegan Knox's knee injury during the Mae Young Classic, and her ability to improvise on the fly and do some heel work in light of something that is unexpected. How a talent can handle those situations will reflect very strongly upon them, particularly, I'm sure, with the people in the back.
So Ripley used the prism lock, but Zayn got out of it, and she goes off the top, and Ripley, from the mat, lands a drop kick, goes for the riptide, it's stopped, and Zayn tries the insane elbow, Rhea gets her boot up, and then after ducking a spinning back fist, hits the riptide in 9:53. So it's Rhea Ripley joining Alexa Bliss and Roxanne Perez, and I would say it was about like 5 or 6 minutes that they had here without Zoe Stark. But you could also tell just with the crowd, like they had seen something like obviously very significant here. And it was sort of like these two, I think they did what they could here afterward. But I think everyone was kind of focused on the injury here that had just happened. And again, you had just that giant scream as well. That was just not your typical like pro wrestling you know, taunt or something like that. It was very distinct.
Yeah, under the circumstances, I thought these two ended up pulling together a really nice little match here with like decent amount of near falls. I think they could have just easily somehow like gone to a finish if they were really that concerned about it. But like they actually created this semblance of struggle that I thought it elicited some reaction from the two. I thought it was a really tough first match for Kairi Sane to come back to. I mean, unfortunately, because of this, you know. But I also think, like, her eating a pinfall to Rhea Ripley doesn't really hurt her at all. It doesn't really kind of change the rankings. Everybody loses to Rhea Ripley. So, I have to think that she would get a proper, maybe, push, we would hope. You know, somebody of her sort of rank, maybe in the weeks following, we hope at least.
There was a Rusev promo addressing Tozawa. I admire your courage. I was just trying to fix you. You ungrateful little man going out to challenge me. You should have walked away. Your ego might get you cheered, but your arrogance will get you slaughtered. And that is coming up next week. Judgment Day are hanging out when Finn Balor walks in with Roxanne Perez. A background interaction that has now come to the foreground. And Dom is looking very annoyed when Balor enters and Raquel is not happy to see Roxanne Perez. Balor introduces her and then mentions how Dom had said about adding more members. And, you know, we've got all of our backs, but Raquel and Liv don't have anyone for them. So Dom says we should speak with Liv. And Balor says not to worry about that. And Perez informs them that she's got some presents for them. And she presents chicken tenders to Dominic and an apple inside of a bag for Carlito. And Raquel warns Balor that Liv is going to hear about this.
An apple in a bag. Hey, I think the Judgment Day for me has kind of cooled off, you know, in recent months. But I think with the introduction of like a new person to completely throw off the dynamic, I'm into this. I think it's a great idea to insert Roxanne into the Judgment Day as a heel character. I think her vibe totally fits as a sort of manipulator. And of course, it draws parallels to Liv Morgan's role and her entry into the group being the manipulator that, you know, opposing Rhea Ripley. So I think it's a great way to integrate her properly into Raw. I would also suspect, like, if maybe this idea was, I wonder if this was part of the reason why Julia was removed from this pairing, because Julia would have really no fit in this particular story. But I'm very much looking forward to seeing what Roxanne does here. It's and I'm looking forward to the ultimate interactions with Liv Morgan, which should be a lot of fun. So destination for this, like, I have to think maybe similar to what it was with Rhea and Liv. Liv Morgan coming out of this as a babyface. The only question is, where is Dom going to go? Who is Dom going to choose?
Yeah, I think you could have a lot of fun with this. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, including an in-depth look at WrestleMania 32 from 2016, a 2003 edition of SmackDown featuring the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and a special patron's pick where you get to choose what John and Wei review. MCU Later returns with a review of Thunderbolts. Pollock and Ting will sit down and talk. We've also got coverage of Wrestling Dontaku, Collision Course every Saturday night, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 a month gets you in the door at postwrestlingcafe.com. Jey Uso and Bron Breakker is the final match, non-title, and they go through the break. Breakker's in control for a long period and then hits the flying clothesline off the apron. Jey comes back, he hits the pop-up Samoan, and it's a Breakensteiner from Bron. Heyman gets onto the apron to distract, and Bron grabs a chair and is stopped by a super kick. Heyman then trips Jey, so Jey goes after Paul, and Heyman takes off his suit jacket and is pretending like he's going to fight Jey, which is the cue for Seth Rollins to jump Jey, and the DQ is called. It's a two-on-one beatdown of Jey until Zayn comes down, and Zayn just stands on the apron, instructing the crowd to know that he is not alone. The only part that I found so amusing about this is that they booked this with the notion that by having Zayn come out and waiting for so long, the crowd instinctively will know that the big name is going to come. Mm-hmm. 1 month after we did the main event of WrestleMania with this exact same psychology, but did not have The Rock backing Travis Scott. Like, the same thinking that went into this segment was absent the main event of WrestleMania, with that idea that one is a prelude to the bigger name.
So if we're going to revisit that, I mean, I had my suspicions that they knew exactly what they were doing there. And if we recall Dwayne Johnson's interview coming off of that, we recall him saying something to the effect of, I would have finessed things a little bit differently. I suspect he meant the introduction of Travis Scott, somehow alluding to his pending arrival. I'm sure he wasn't happy with that. You know, like, it's kind of wrestling 101. And I also wonder if, like, if that segment was intentionally done to make Dwayne look bad.
Well, we're thinking too. Well, this one worked great because this crowd was so loud chanting for CM Punk. It was like, this was Chicago, dude. This was Greenville. And when his music played, this place exploded as he came out, backs up, and we get this big brawl with Punk and Zayn, with Braun and Rollins. They head into the crowd, and Jay is left in the ring, and it's already the credits have come up for the brawl. So we're just cutting to Jay Uso in the final seconds, and you know what's coming. He turns, and there is Logan Paul, who knocks him out for the fourth time. I thought this ending was fantastic. Not just with the brawl setting that match up for Saturday, but just the knockout punch at the end, which really capped off, to me, I thought, one of the better editions of Raw we've had in some time. Like, outside of, like, the unfortunate injury, which was the low point, I just thought this was a well done show to lead up to Saturday night's main event, which feels like, you know, a not massive show, but they did their part of trying to build up the two key matches on the Raw side. But more importantly, they've really set the field for this whole championship picture, basically for the summer. Is these are the players involved on the Raw side and trying to get everyone in place for all of these different potential scenarios.
Yeah. I'm just going back to the match. I thought Braun versus Jay was a great showcase for Braun, as usual. For me, as somebody like who...
There's no Jey Uso match that you're going to see on paper and say, oh, I can't wait for this. Like, yeah, a 15 to 20 minute Jey Uso match is, you know, the hope is that you get to the final 5 minute stretch and you can do all the near falls and the crowd is with it. But yeah, dude, it's a chore to get through, like, the first half.
Well, for the time being, the crowd is with it. Like, that's what he
and they are
for,
and that's the big, you know, boost. It's like, this guy is super over, and I'm not going to be negative on that, but it's like,
but that has its limits. And I think already for a large section of the online audience, it's an act that's already wearing thin, you know, like seeing somebody come out, take up 10 minutes of screen time to go yeet, right? Does he have the substance in ring to back it up? It's been repeated performances now where I think we could still very much call into doubt that ability. But nonetheless, a great showcase for Braun. And I didn't even mind the finish so much here because we knew the point for Rollins was to beat up Jay. So the result was really kind of irrelevant from the beginning. My favorite thing, and the thing I'm most excited about in this entire mix, though, is what's going on with Sami Zayn. I thought the way they constructed this, like, reaction for Punk was awesome, where Zayn comes out, doesn't say a word. He stands on the apron and the crowd is chanting CM Punk. And yeah, you know, that's... Zayn is going to call back to a moment like this. He's going to use this as fuel to just despise CM Punk. I'm coming out here and you're cheering for that guy. You know, I'm standing here like I'm a background player next to, like, this guy who, you know, like he doesn't have the greatest history with. And it's really some brilliant orchestrating of the
subtleties
audience.
Have been very strong from Sammy and all. Even when he showed up in the locker room with Jay, it's like this underlying tension that you can detect, but it's, and it will all pay dividends, but it's they're also not like wink into the camera to make you, they're not hitting you over the head with any of this, but it's like you can just watch the subtleties of Sami Zayn, and it's very good stuff.
It is so normal that we know there's something wrong, right? Like, the segment you're talking about was Sami going to the back and saying, Jay, don't worry about this, I got your back on Saturday, don't worry. And somehow we're supposed to, like, as wrestling fans, because we've been, like, screwed with so much, we learned that there's no segment that takes place that's just normal, right? Somebody is going to screw somebody in the end. And whatever they're doing with Zayn, I'm just completely captivated by. And I think they're doing a great job with.
Yeah, there's probably a good chance he's the one that eats the pin in this match on Saturday.
That, or can we actually get the turn?
You could do the turn.
Yeah,
could go your, like a Punk Zayn reaction direction.
Yeah, is that your immediate match? Is it Punk versus Zayn, or do we wait until the turn happens on Jay later on?
Yeah, I think for maximum impact, you want Sammy going after Jay. I think that's. Or they could do it at a press conference as well. They could do the turn there.
That could happen then as well. Yeah.
All right. I really liked Raw tonight. I thought that the opening tag and the first women's in the Money in the Bank qualifier were very, very good. Mm-hmm. You had a pretty stiff Sheamus Grayson Waller match. It's more so the booking of the main event scene more than the actual match between Breaker and Jay was the standout for me. But I thought this was a good mix of kind of wrestling on the first half, but overall it was kind of just the booking and setting up Saturday and beyond that I thought was the strengths of the show.
Promising directions here. Like I'm curious to see what Roxanne does with Judgment Day. I think that's a very interesting scenario. As I mentioned, the Sami Zayn thing is really enjoyable right now. What's the update on the women's Money in the Bank?
Alexa Bliss, Rhea Ripley, and the other one is
Roxanne.
Yes. Yeah. So those are the three with three more to go.
Did somebody else call?
The men's, we only have Solo Sikoa.
That's all
we're at for those. Right. So, okay. Well, those were our thoughts on Raw, and we are going to be saying goodbye to everybody on the YouTube channel. But coming up this week, we mentioned the book club. We also
have the wellness policy tomorrow.
I was going to say.
It is wellness policy number 50.
No 50. Way. You've done 50 of these? Wow.
We've done 50 of them. It's been years we've done the wellness policy. And tomorrow we are going to be doing our 50th edition. Me, Jordan Goodman, Neil Flanagan. Don't know what we'll be talking about, but we will be talking. In fact, I believe Jordan has teased that we might get an update on Mr. Flanagan's love life. Episode 50, the big hook.
Right sounds there. Intriguing. I thought he was going to disclose that once we got to the midpoint of All the President's Men.
You could follow up.
Okay. Sure. I could follow up. Yes.
Yeah. 1 p.m. Eastern time at youtube.com/postwrestling. It is a free stream and you can find the downloaded version over at postwrestlingcafe.com for free.
And we will have up next on Tuesday night, Way and I are back with Rewind Dynamite on Wednesday night. And then again, at the Post Wrestling Cafe this week, we're going to have Collision Course on a special day on Friday, Dark Side of the Ring Daphne review with Karen Peterson and Kate from Montreal. And then we will have you covered here on the YouTube channel. Subscribe, like the video, because we are going to have coverage Saturday night of Saturday night's main event, coverage on Sunday night after Double or Nothing, and coverage from the Poison Rana crew after NXT Battleground. So there you have it. We will say goodbye on the YouTube channel, but we're going to keep going on the Post Wrestling Cafe. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.